everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife with Midwifery Business Consultation. I have Margaret Buxton here. She is the clinical director of Baby & Co. I have been waiting so long to speak with her. I already told her before the meeting, I'm very biased to the model, the birth center franchise model, and what it could be as a potential for the country. So if you want to introduce yourself, Margaret, and tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I started my midwifery career as a student at Vanderbilt, graduated in 99. My first job was in a birth center in Nashville, and I love birth centers. I've always had a heart for out-of-hospital birth. I was actually born at home myself on a hippie commune a long time ago. And my birth story is in spiritual midwifery. That's a little fun fact.
That's very cool.
For those who are interested. So I apprenticed actually at home birth. That was my introduction to becoming a midwife. I knew I wanted to finish nursing school and get my master's, and I accomplished that. And eventually, about 15 years later, got my doctorate from the University of Alabama, Birmingham. So I've been at Vanderbilt doing inpatient full scope midwifery starting in 2002. All the way up to 2014, all the while dreaming of getting back to the birth center world. And lo and behold, it kind of came to me through a healthcare startup called Baby & Co. that was founded by Kara Osborne, who's also a nurse midwife who graduated from Vanderbilt. And so we've kind of been on a journey for the last 5 years in Nashville with an integrated partnership between Baby & Co. and Vanderbilt Health. And that has gone well. Our practice now, 5 years old, we've closing in on our 2000th birth, and 11 midwives. We've got like 7 nurses, I think. Our medical director practices with us, and we're thriving here in Nashville. And I'm happy to report that in the 5 years since the birth center opened, close to the Vanderbilt Hospital campus, all the major other hospitals competing for OB in the community now have doulas and midwives and are building women's centers. And so this is an exciting development for women, showing what's possible when you sort of innovate and bring new energy in. And I think now in Nashville, we have we've seen this, well, I'll just back up and say it's the South. It's conservative. You know, it's not a progressive healthcare environment. And yet now Baby & Co. is ranked as the best place to have a baby, you know, which I think is so wonderful.
That's crazy in 5 years. That's so amazing. And so, I think that gives inspiration that it didn't take 20, 30 years of now the kids and the grandkids delivered.
Yeah. Women want options and they want to be cared for really well. And that relationship-based, customized, personalized experience in healthcare should be the norm and not the exception. So I think we've learned a lot along the way in 5 years, but I'm excited for what the next 10 years can bring. I have 4 children, a daughter in college and a 15-year-old daughter, and my goal is like in 10 years when they're ready to have children, themselves and their peers think, duh, the birth center, right? I hope every community has low-risk birth centers near major medical centers and has midwives taking care of low-risk women and giving women that option. So I'm excited to talk about, you know, the partnership and answer any questions.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to go a little bit of history with Baby & Co., how it's evolved the last 5 years, I know they had multiple locations and some of the challenges when you have some states have regulations, some not, how it evolved into just focusing more on Nashville.
Yeah. The healthcare startup, Baby & Co. was founded by Kara Osborne, like I said, got going in 2014, grew pretty rapidly over the course of a couple years in several states in the Southeast and in Colorado. We learned a lot along the way, and as healthcare startups grow and evolve, they also change, and we found that that happened too. There were regulatory issues, especially in North Carolina specifically, that didn't have birth center regulations, and that became problematic as the years went on. And then there was also some clinical, you know, events that were created media attention, and so we had to work through that together as an organization. And as well, there were challenges with payers trying to secure contracts that were fair and ultimately sustainable for the business of providing midwifery care and birth centers. So the healthcare startup by 2018 and 19 shrunk back down to several different centers, and eventually Nashville became the only center remaining open. And what happened in May of 2019 was that the decision was made that the healthcare startup would dissolve and the Nashville center was sold to Vanderbilt Health. Vanderbilt Health, you know, had that provider contract for 5 years and began to see the birth center through the lens of the, you know, the community and the value of it. And when Baby and Company was, you know, approached them to sell it, they were very interested. And that was completed just prior to the pandemic starting, which I'm super grateful because I know that from a legal perspective, it would have never probably happened if it didn't close right before things went south with COVID. So,
well, yeah, if you want to go into that partnership arrangement, because I think it's really neat how the midwives have the Vanderbilt relationship and just that past history of strong midwifery in the hospital really helped out the birth center.
Right. So Vanderbilt had a thriving midwifery practice that was founded as part of their education system. As you know, Vanderbilt School of Nursing has the number one midwifery education program in the country. So that when that program started, they knew they needed a faculty practice for students to be able to have clinical sites. So that hospital-based practice started in the late 90s and really grew. You know, it was the only midwifery practice in town for, you know, hospital-based birth. There was a handful of home birth midwives here in Nashville, but that was it. And over those decades, women developed relationships with the Vanderbilt midwives, and the statistics from that practice were really outstanding. They're nationally recognized for their outcomes. And so, at our peak in, 2013, 14, statistically, we were doing about a quarter of the birth volume at the hospital, and that our epidural rate was 50%. So it was a perfect marketplace to plop a birth center nearby and say to all these women who went into a tertiary medical center and said, no, I don't want any bells and whistles. I want my midwife. I want to squat on the bed and leave as fast as I can. You know, the hospital's like, very well, then here you go. Here's a birth center. And so it was a perfect relationship for Baby and Co. The Vanderbilt nurse midwives were well loved and respected in the community. So those midwives were contracted to work at the birth center. And I got to be the one to kind of help pull that together. And then the healthcare startup hired staff and nurses and the support around that and did the bricks and mortar. So the center itself is located less than a mile away from the medical center. And of course, Vanderbilt Health then receives all of our maternal and newborn transports.
So I think it's great just to get creativity of a win-win situation. I mean, the hospital is getting a great, credible relationship. They're getting a lot of referrals. You know, young families, if they haven't established a primary care, a pediatrician, they're already tapping into that resource. And I think a lot of the safety concerns that come with people considering a birth center startup is those transfers. It's not so much the bad outcome. It's the breakdown of communication, the collaboration. So I think, yeah, if you want to branch out more on that, I think it's amazing the relationship you guys have built there in 5 years.
Yeah, and I think the success wasn't one thing. It was a lot of things working together. And you're right, healthcare, the success in healthcare is built on relationships, those clinical partnerships. And they, when they remain strong and respectful, then things can go smoothly and seamless care can be a wonderful reality. And we certainly have tracked that carefully. We want to know from everyone who had a baby with us, what was it like if you stayed in the center and had a baby? What was your transport like? You know, how could we have done better? What should we never stop doing that you really loved? I think for those who are interested in the idea of a collaborative experience with a birth center and a hospital, having a hospital-based midwifery practice makes a big difference, because if birth center midwives can't be the one to follow their clients, assume care, and finish the birth, then if they can sign out and hand off to another midwife and it's a midwife-to-midwife transfer, that's a huge satisfier for clients. From a philosophical point of view, they know that that midwifery-led care is going to be emotionally supportive, seeking, you know, shared decision-making and something ultimately that the clients really appreciate in the end as they look back and say, oh, I had, across the continuum, I had an incredible experience. As well, working with medical directors and other birth professionals that see the value of low-risk care and out-of-hospital settings, understand the evidence, support the providers who want to provide that care and the clients who choose it, is huge, right? So coming over for a transport shouldn't be seen as a failure. It's a success of true collaboration. It's a success when, you know, a baby is able to go from the birth center to the NICU to receive the supportive care that's needed. So that's one thing I'll say that is, you know, is a big part of what has made our birth center work so well. And, you know, I think birth centers are known for burning out midwives. we take on this Herculean effort to do it all and to try to, you know, make ends meet and take on more and more and more to make it work financially. And I would love to see a future where we abandon that idea, because what it does is it leads to burnout and ultimately closures. And one of the things that we've created at the Nashville Birth Center is what we've been able to secure good, respectable contracts for the work we're providing. And then we've worked really hard on the culture. So we're thinking, you know, the details around hours and vacation and the support that the midwives have. And I'm happy to report that we've come a long way. We've learned a lot, but our turnover is almost nothing. So the people that come there stay there, and we work really hard to tackle that work-life balance and what is too much call, what's enough, you know, from a numbers perspective. You know, when did we switch from doing 24-hour shifts to 12 because it was unsustainable? You know, I could bore you for hours and hours and all that.
Oh, but I'm sure everybody's loving it right now, because I mean, that's my passion and soul, is starting midwifery business consultation. I think the big habit, Achilles heels, is the midwives will say, well, I want this building and I want this color wall. And I'm thinking, okay, we got to talk about the market analysis. We got to talk about the risks. We want a strong foundation for starting these birth centers. I mean, historically, longstanding birth centers have a really good collaborating relationship. It's typically community owned because it's not dependent on that fragility of one person. And there's a balance, like, okay, is it better to have two midwives or 20 midwives or 10? There's that balancing act. But I think it's so important to have, like you talked about, a good structure, a good business plan, a good thought analysis of, okay, meeting with the medical director, what hospital are you thinking about having a relationship? Do they already have a midwifery practice? What does the community think of midwives right now? Like, what are those strengths and weaknesses that you have to overcome before your doors open?
Right. It's short and long term. And you're absolutely right. So we're always looking for ways to improve in terms of our care and then our own internal structure. We are embarking now on a very ambitious integration with Epic. And so we have just come through a 7-month design phase of creating a version of Epic for out-of-hospital birth for our
intrapartum. Wow, that's exciting.
And the exciting part is that the fields in the birth center charting system populate the record if she transports to the hospital. And so essentially the transcribing notes and all of the difficulties that we have with records going from one setting to another will dissolve and it will truly be, from an EHR perspective, a seamless transport. So
yeah, that's a huge improvement of safety standards. I mean, a lot of it's the breakdown of communications. It's kind of an emergency. The midwife's trying to recall exactly. I mean, it's in the system. They can look at it ahead of time before they get there. That's amazing. You guys are doing that project.
So. The nurses as well. And so the other part we're doing is the charge triggers that are built into the system. And it's really interesting because we use the words admission and discharge in the birth center setting, but truly, like in Tennessee, it's licensed as an outpatient facility. So it's not a true admission because it's not a 24-hour stay, right? Yeah. And so how do you, as we transport over to the hospital, how do you have a charge capture for a portion of the episode of care that they want to go for, and how does the birth center keep the portion for, let's say they labored her till 9 centimeters for 8 hours, that's billable, right? And that has to be broken out and separated from maybe a delivery code at the hospital. So it's very exciting. And these are the little details that matter. Like I said, from a financial perspective, the keeping birth centers open means getting all that right. Yeah. So that the birth center, you know, is well supported.
Well, and I think it's so important because I think midwives, it's not our strength. You either do the billing yourself, you do cash, you hire it out. But I think those gray zones, if it's outside of standard global maternity, there's transfers, there's extra things, like you're just as responsible for caring for the mom as you are keeping that practice financially sustainable. And if you're in a state where there's not birth center regulations, or if nobody's done this before, you guys are paving the way of amazing potential for other practices. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. And I think, you know, our go live date is February 1st. So talk to me after that.
Okay.
But so far, we're getting everybody trained. And, you know, I am very optimistic about it working out well, and ultimately being an exemplar for other healthcare systems that want to have this type of service model for women.
What suggestion would you have if some midwife is watching this video and she's saying, oh my gosh, I want this. What would be the basic first steps just to start the analysis? She's been dreaming about it and you're like, okay, I've been inspired. What would be some simple things for them just to take the next step forward? Who to talk to or resources to go to you guys have used?
Yeah, you know, I think exploring first the partnership, if you get the partnership solid, so everyone's goals are aligned. There's frank conversations about how the finances would work, what the shared governance would be with a major medical system. Get the partnership totally secure, and do that through this, you know, talking to people. You know, who are the people in charge of the healthcare entity? What are their goals? Do they see the value in moving some low risk birth, not, you know, into an out of hospital setting, seeing that ultimately from a win-win versus a turf war or some type of competition. You can have those internal champions within the healthcare system, you start to build that strong clinical partnership, then do the bricks and mortar, then talk about, you know, hiring and staffing, in a good market analysis is important. Where are the other, what are the other options for out of hospital birth? Where are they located? What was the success? I think the contracts are huge. You have to figure out who the payers are in the community that represent the lion's share, you know, because different communities have dominant payer groups where they have the most contracts for businesses, small businesses, or, you know, depends on each setting. For that organization, do they have any birth center contracts? What's the global, in doing a pro forma business analysis of saying what would be possible if I captured this many in the market? You're not trying to compete with a major medical center. You're only going to end up taking a little slice, but that slice, what's the payer mix and what
Yeah, that break-even analysis of like, okay, if I had this hypothetical conservative analysis of how many ladies would I have to take? Because I think that's the part that surprises too many midwives is they're like, there's such a need. If I build it, they will come, and they may come. Most midwives get terribly busy, but maybe the financial overhead just is too much that the payer will do or the women are willing or can do. So I think it's not just about doing a market analysis with the community needs, but just the fiscal realistic expectations. Which isn't as fun of a part to do, but it's still very important.
It's intimidating, but it's also very doable. Like if you know that the big payer in your community, let's say, is Blue Cross Blue Shield, but their historicals on Birth Center Globals is $2,000, you know, I'm making up numbers.
Yeah, right? Of course.
I'm not throwing that Blue Cross Blue Shield under the bus. Yeah. But I'm saying if that's the case, then you can quickly realize, ooh, I've got to either show them that, you know, the true value of this episode of care is actually $10,000, or work together with the clinical partnership to go to that payer and say, hey, wait a minute, you know, we get 14 for a vag birth in the hospital, right? Mm-hmm. Let's look at the value of this model and what the win-win and leverage that relationship as you sit down and talk to payers. Yeah. You need really good contracts that you know ultimately are going to carry and float your business.
Awesome. I think that's amazing advice. I think I joked, I had up for a long time, elephant, you take one bite at a time. It's just huge. It's massive. If you try to look at everything, I mean, people will talk, this is too much. And I'm like, that's why it takes a few years to plan a birth center or a private practice. You don't just do it in 3 to 6 months because there's so much to think about. And you would rather make the mistakes on paper and hypothetically thinking whether it's a different direction or a foundational structure or just not starting it at this time. It makes more sense to play that game of like, okay, let's play around with our options. And maybe I didn't even think about this, and now the business plan got me to do that. What other great advice would you give people, Margaret, that are thinking of starting a birth center or want a similar model to what you have with Vanderbilt?
I don't know, so many places to go.
I know. You can choose whatever one jumps to your mind.
Yeah, I want to speak to marketing a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think that Baby & Company experimented with a lot of different ways to get the word out. And I think at the end of the day, it was grassroots. It was farmers markets, you know, events where people come with their children, and that nurturing relationships in the long term, building trust, having fun, really was what made the difference for people seeing who we were and having an experience from a marketing perspective, not where we're pushing something on them, but that they felt like they started to, you know, ally with it. And it took a couple years. It was really interesting to do some of the market analysis that we did. We did some focus groups. The lack of understanding about what midwives do, the confusion around midwife versus doula, mm-hmm. That, you know, getting into the grassroots events and aligning with birth professionals in the community to also, you know, form those relationships to educate women is huge, because we walk around thinking, you know, of course people know what we do. They don't. They don't understand. They really need the basics. I remember I was in a three-way mirror, you know, watching a focus group. And one of the women said, you know, the person held up certified nurse midwife on a piece of paper and asked for their reaction. And her comment was, you know, anybody can go online and get a certification. My question is, are they an RN? Mm-hmm. I mean, this was a couple of years ago.
Wow.
Wow. Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're a master's prepared APRNs. Mm-hmm. So just don't underestimate what people don't know.
Yeah. So like the marketing analysis, the focus groups, the surveys, really getting to the basics. Don't make any assumptions of, because yeah, that affects your branding and logo, because you don't want to have issues with trying to get an image when you're making assumptions of something they may or may not know.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the work that can be done way before you open. I made a beeline to childbirth educators and doulas and other birth professionals in the community, circled up and said, here's what we're doing. Here's what we're planning. Here's, if you're excited about this, here's how you can become involved. Getting the word out there, helping people understand what we are and what we're not, that, that this is actually an affordable. People saw it and it was beautiful and fancy. And they were like, oh, this is for wealthy people. Right. And we were like, oh my gosh, this is a third of the cost of hospital-based birth. You know, that was another thing too. Helping people understand it and experience it and enjoy it. We hosted a lot of community events at the birth center for other organizations just to get
people involved
with it. You know, it's huge. Seeing it is worth believing.
Yeah, I think it's just like making awareness of like when you see something new and beautiful in the stereotype of a birth center, people think, well, that's just the upper class or certain stereotype stigma goes there. So it's the education of what financial, do you have sliding fee schedules? Do you have a cash payment plan? Like making people aware that this is affordable for anyone. Or I've seen a lot of great birth centers do like a foundation where they'll give away a birth a couple times a year just to help with being available. So there's so many ways you can help out your community and letting them know your mission and value from the forefront of who you would like to serve. And that's most of the time everybody that they can.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing I'll say is just really robust, strong clinical protocols that are evidence-based, that you form in collaboration with your receiving facility, so that, you know, it doesn't mean that you're ceding control, but you know, on the continuum of that healthcare partnership, it's important for all the stakeholders on the receiving end to know what you do, to know what you don't do, you know, and for that to be an ongoing conversation with transparency on your quality metrics and your outcomes, you know, all that goes a long way in building a really strong clinical partnership.
Well, and I think I look at it as a positive of you're building that relationship stronger. You're getting to know each other more in the thought process, the clinical thinking skills, but you're also educating those providers. Maybe they understand nurse midwives in the hospital setting. They've had a great relationship for a long time, but they may be not the experts in birth center, home birth, and the differences of resources. So it gives you an opportunity for them to learn your supplies, your protocols, so then they feel more comfortable. And you have a streamline. I think that's where, okay, we're going to transfer to this place, and this is your startup protocol, and then you anticipate you're going to do this, and if they're not streamlined together, it does affect that safety and flow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Margaret. It was a pleasure talking to you. If there's a great way, if I'm assuming you're comfortable with people just reaching out if they have basic questions, if you don't mind giving your best contact information, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm reachable through email. It's margaret.buxton@vumc.org. I'm happy to field questions.
Perfect. And I will put that in the description down below. So thank you so much for your time, Margaret. Have a great day. I appreciate you taking a break from the kiddos. So
thank you. Appreciate it.